All right, welcome to the Pulpit and Pew podcast. My name is Zach Rowland, representing the Pew side of the equation. With me, as always, is Pastor Matt Higginbotham. How you doing?
Righteous Reverend Matt Higginbotham.
Righteous Reverend. Is it not? Is it? Are they interchangeable terms?
They are for me, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I was doing a survey today with the American Red Cross. They were walking around looking at our campus and if we were to be an emergency shelter where they might be able to put people and whatever, you know, just so that they can be ready. And after about 8 minutes of awkward, like, interaction for the guy on that side, because he's like, Pastor, Reverend, he's like, what should I call you? And I was like, Matt? And he's like, oh, okay.
Like, it was okay. Just,
yeah, so.
Doctor? Yeah.
No, not that for sure. So yeah, I've been doing all right, staying busy at ministry and life. So yeah, things are blowing and going generally. Well, I'm trying to think of anything real specific, noteworthy stuff that's happened. Getting ready for a little fall festival this weekend.
And yeah,
got kids always coming into my house and leaving my house. My college kids are around a lot, so just being a dad.
You gonna dress up as anything for fall festival?
I'll probably come as Pastor Matt Higginbotham, I believe. Maybe this exact same shirt that I'm wearing.
I'm going to be Robin Hood this year.
Be Robin Hood?
Yeah.
Stealing from the rich?
Yep.
Yeah? Is Ruth going to be the rich and you're just going to be taking her candy and putting
it in? No, Ruth is going to be Princess Jasmine.
This is not a very themed
trip. Bubba is going to be Chase from Paw Patrol.
And what is Taylor going to be?
I don't know. I told her she could, like, we could do a play on like the Robin Hood thing. She could put a target, you know, on get a white shirt with a target on it on the belly. Funny stuff.
Did she like that idea?
No, I don't think she laughed at all.
Yeah. I think she's going to go as pregnant.
Yeah. I think she's going to, she's going to go as someone who's going to give birth in like a week.
Yeah. I'm 2 weeks away from this thing being done.
Yep.
Well, praise God for that. So yeah, so just, Staying busy at it. What about you? What's been going on for the last couple weeks for you, Zach?
Done with all my work travel. Been doing that. So it's been keeping me from home the last couple weeks, but I knocked all that out so I don't have to travel for the rest of the year, at least not anything major. And just keeping the house cleaner than we normally do. Trying to be ready should we go into labor or anything like that.
You got your phone on ring right now just in case?
No, it'll shake. I should probably turn that off because I'll
turn my ringer off right now as I'm talking about this.
Yeah. Nothing, just enjoying the weather, really.
Yeah, it was nice getting some rain this weekend, man. We needed that. So it's good. God's good to do that.
And then the highs of like 85. It's been nice too.
Yeah. So we've been, what we do here is we try to deal with issues that can help inform your faith, maybe give you something that maybe you would have liked to talk about. Maybe you don't have people to talk to it about and deal with some of those things that are in and around Christianity. And so today, this came out of, you were deacon of the day this last Sunday. Was this your first time doing deacon duty?
First time.
You forgot to get ushers to come with you?
I didn't think it was a big deal because, I did forget. I'm not saying I didn't forget. But I'm also the guy that's like sitting there watching, and if only three people go up there, I'll pop up and go help. And like,
but if one goes up, they assume
the person who asked me was Peyton. I was like, "Yes, Peyton, I will take your help." She was the one person watching, help a brother out. But yeah, I forgot.
Yeah,
won't get fooled again. But also, in my defense, like I came in ready to play bass. Russell wasn't here, so I ended up like
on the drums,
seeing if I remembered how to play drums and doing that. So
you did fine. I was busy. I didn't notice anything wrong with the drums at all. It was good.
No, that's good.
Yeah. So you you had the offertory prayer, which is part of the what the deacon does there. And in your prayer, you mentioned something that just kind of triggered in my mind about the people in the world whose freedom of worship, freedom of assembly is substantially different than ours.
Yeah.
A lot of people who can't gather for prayer, gather for worship in a group setting across the world. And so I thought, man, we could talk a little bit about persecution in the church. So internationally, across the globe, what persecution in the church looks like, the response of the Christian to persecution, and then even our kind of watered-down version. I say that, like, when you feel persecution in your life today, it's not watered down, but no one's demanding your life in America if you profess Christ at work or whatever. So how can you respond in the types of persecution that we'll face as believers here today? So I thought that'd be a good thing to kind of talk about for a little while.
I mean, it came to mind. I think it popped into my mind at that point because I had seen some stuff about things going on in Africa and the Middle East, just on a like random post or something. And like, that's a pretty consistent thing. Like, if you were to really look for it, you can find terrible, fresh, terrible stories about persecution, especially in Africa. You know, you'll have like Boko Haram, like burns down a church with a church school
kids
with
inside.
300 people in it, yeah. Kids. And you're just, and it's like, does not get reported.
It doesn't ripple. It doesn't ripple the news over here. Yeah. Like a lot of other events will.
Yeah.
Mostly because what does Nigeria mean to the regular American?
Yeah.
Right. And so we're like, well, it doesn't affect us today, even though there's plenty of Nigerians or people of Nigerian ancestry in America. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's okay. Yeah. And so like radical Islam, I guess I know that's a buzzword, but Islam that follows closely the tenets of Muhammad, leading to jihad and the destruction of all blasphemers, is ravaging yeah. large parts of the globe, but especially Africa, where it's taken root. You know, obviously Saharan Africa is Islamic, but even now coming down a little bit into sub-Saharan Africa, you have Islamic groups like Boko Haram, terrorist groups, mm-hmm. who are like organizing their own next version of whatever the Muslim crusades are, where they're conquests.
Yeah, and it's nothing new. I mean, it was the same thing in Rhodesia. You know, it was the Hutus and the Tutsis, you know, the Hutus were Christian minority, genocided by the Tutsis. I mean, that, whatever role you think the CIA had in that, but regardless, it's been something that's going on for forever. I didn't say anything. It's been going on forever.
I feel like the podcast almost took a very, very hard turn in a direction I'm unprepared to go.
No, I'm not prepared to go that direction either. That's just what a lot of people say. But anyway.
Okay.
So I'm really not trying to get us canceled. I'm just regardless, it's been going on for a long time. Like it's nothing new. So it's something that we should stop and think about. And at least, you know, it should give you cause to be thankful. And I think that's what I was doing in that moment, as I was just thankful that like, man, we can just come to church, get McDonald's on the way. You know,
there's no risk to
it's
life
just
or
part of your day.
Yeah. There's no risk to your life or to your economic abilities as a person. No one's not going to do business with you because you were at church on Sunday.
Yeah.
And that does, in large parts of the world, your whole life is going to be affected through how you worship. And so we are, as Americans, we need to find some degree of gratitude, and we struggle with that sometimes, but to be grateful for the fact that we've got liberties that large parts of the globe don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And these liberties include the freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, where we can gather without risk of government reprisal. And if someone was to come against us, like when you have a shooting at a church or something like that, it's condemned. The person is prosecuted. There's not like a mob in support of that actor there. So So we're real fortunate there. So what is persecution in the church like? Definitionally, what do you think that would look like? To from the most extreme version to maybe a mild version, what is persecution? Could it look like?
Persecution in the church or just persecution of the church at large?
Yeah, of the church.
I mean, the most mild form would be what we have in America. I believe, or just people just disagree with you vehemently and they try to make you feel bad about what you believe or
may not invite you to the birthday party.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not getting fired or anything like that. I mean, that's even getting fired is relatively tame. So that's the lightest form, is just a perceived slight, or perceived ostracization.
Sure.
Ostracization.
I don't know.
Ostracism. I don't know.
Exorcism.
Being ostracized, feeling ostracized. And then like stepping up from that would be like, yeah, getting fired or it being like some type of state sanctioned, state allowed,
mistreatment.
Yeah. Mistreatment. Yeah. And then the worst being just, you know, what we were talking about
earlier. Unrelenting death or fleeing for your life.
Yep.
Not being allowed to be in your ancestral homeland because other people have come in and condemned you to die if you were to set foot in there.
You know what's interesting is like China actually has a state-sanctioned Christian church.
Yeah.
But it has some weird heretical stuff to it.
As a state-sanctioned church from China,
Xi Jinping is like the pope of the Christian. You wouldn't say pope, but he is the leader of the Christian church in China. So you know it's fully under the CCP.
When we did our little denomination study, I took that survey, and I was very much a member of the fivefold church or something like that, whatever it's called. I was like 88% in agreement with them. And that's where I knew the survey was not good because like there was a question on there. It's basically like, do you abide by all the laws and rules of the Chinese Communist Party?
Yeah.
And I was like, no,
no,
I don't think that's the right way. They're not the ultimate arbiters of things. But in that church, like that's the final straw. Like,
but you like potlucks, so you're still in.
Yeah. But if the government decides, hey, we're not doing this way anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to have these symbols that we're going to show. You must display them, or we're not going to have these symbols and you're not going to display them. Mm-hmm. It's a very repressed church there, the state church. It's a corrupted form of Christianity, though I do think there are probably genuine believers even in there. But you have an underground church in China, right? That's constantly.
Yeah, you do. That's what I was going to mention, is that you do have this underground church that is persecuted. I wouldn't profess to know exactly what degree they're persecuted to. I would imagine it involves prison or something.
Yeah, pastors like that are getting locked up in China when they're and you know, China is like we're a surveillance state here.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt that, you know, the government, the United States government, has all the information about my whereabouts, what stores I frequent, what websites I frequent, like everything. They know, they have a file on me, even though I'm not particularly interesting to them. But China has like the social score, like social credit score type thing. They know everything. And so to meet in secret in China is very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Communist Party is able to ferret out who the leaders are, so they have to change locations or whatever, when they're able to ferret out who the leaders are of individual congregations, they'll lock those people up for years inside of Chinese prisons, which is can't be a great place to be, I wouldn't think. I did read a story today, though. This is not connected, but it's humorous to me, that China is now looking at certain places, like in public restrooms. If you would like to have some toilet paper, you have to watch like a 5-second ad, and then they distribute some toilet paper to you. And that's some dystopian late stage capitalism right there, Zach. That,
but they're not capitalists.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Sure.
When they make you watch advertisements to get toilet paper,
it's in the name.
They're more capitalistic than we are, I think. That just made me smile when I was thinking about China. But yeah, China's ultra repressive inside of the genuine church. But you were reading like the Open Doors website, and they're not in the top 10.
They're not in the top. They are not in the top 50. They're not on the list.
I think you said them. Just scroll a little slower.
Let me look.
All right. This is good. This is good.
North Korea, Somalia, Yemen, Libya, Sudan. Those are top five. Eritrea, Nigeria, Pakistan, Iran, Afghanistan, top 10. Okay, China, number 15.
Yeah, you're see, right. I thought I remembered you reading them, and I thought, oh, yeah, they are repressive in that area. So the top repressed place for persecution for the true Christian church is in North Korea. And obviously, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because North Korea is just a tin pop dictatorship. Full control.
You can imagine that there's a lot of groups that would end up with North Korea being the top oppressor.
Yeah. North Korea is very, very restrictive in every area, as far as we're aware on this side. But after that, it starts going to a bunch of like African and largely African. There is some Middle Eastern countries early too. But
if you look at a map, I mean, it's a continuous swath of red. Like, this is the place in the world where Christianity is most persecuted.
Oh, yeah, and prosecuted. So we have these hot spots of persecution. And, you know, if you read the history of the church at any point in time, you see with persecution, like, comes a winnowing of the church. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a filtering out of who is and who is not, because you're not going to associate with Christianity in Nigeria. But would you say Yemen was second? I don't even know anything going on in Yemen, but it must be bad. It's like North Korea, Yemen, I think is what you said.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, Yemen, Sudan.
Yeah. So, like, I know Sudan because South Sudan split was over some religious reasons too, but
North Korea, Somalia.
Somalia.
Yeah, Somalia.
Yeah, so, like, if you're in Somalia, you're not going to associate with Christianity.
Yeah.
If you're, like, tentative about it. Like, oh, I kind of like the idea of a God who would send his son to die for me.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be fully committed if you're in, because you're going to face...
I'd say if you're in those top five, you're like, all right, this is it. Could die, tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, if they find out,
yeah,
if they report me to the authority, if they let the terrorist leaders know who run our country, like... Yeah. Our house is going to be burned. Our animals are going to be stolen. Our kids are going to be murdered.
A lot of those African places, there's also this element where it's just so dog-eat-dog that if you find out somebody's Christian, they have heard of instances where, like, people will go kill them not because they're Christian, but because the state says, oh, that's fine, and then you get all their stuff.
Yeah, you can take what was theirs.
You can go take everything that's theirs.
It's sort of like a modern-day purge.
It's carte blanche. It's just, you're allowed to do this.
I guess purge wouldn't be... It's almost like an Esther,
mm-hmm.
right, where Haman is like, I want to destroy Mordecai. Can't just kill him. Let's get an edict that there's going to be a day where we all get to kill all the Jews that we want with no persecution.
Mm.
Like, no one can fight back. The government is sanctioning this. And then, like, the king, who trusts his leaders, like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
And then Haman gets killed, obviously, through the providence of God. Mordecai is there, and Esther's there, and God had arranged everything to lead to Haman's execution. But even after Haman's dead, like, that edict is still in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the king issues another edict that says, like, and the Jews can now
fight back
and take anything they want
from
anyone who shows them any aggression.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a pretty nasty, that's a nasty day. There's a lot of fighting that day. The Jews prevail and receive tons of stuff. But the idea was, like, you know, if I want to get rid of these people, if we just have a free rein on them,
mm-hmm.
we can take all their stuff. Everyone's going to be in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been like a mass slaughter. And Haman would have got what he wanted, which was one guy to die.
Yeah.
But the whole Persian Empire.
Who else had to die for him to get... And you think about John the Baptist, is the other side of that coin, right? Like, Herod is keeping him prisoner and actually kind of likes him, like, respects him.
Yeah.
He's like the one guy that will tell Herod the truth because he doesn't care what Herod thinks of him, and that endears him to him. And then but Herodias gets her daughter to do what she does so that she gets him to promise her any favor that he says, any in front of all the whole court.
And you know, the promise is exactly the same. I don't know if you're with it, but the promise that that Esther received from the king was, "Tell me what you want. Up to half my kingdom, it'll be given to you." And then that's the exact same
word
that Herod uses.
I didn't know. Like,
up to half my kingdom.
Yeah.
Up to half my kingdom. Like, it's the exact same thing that Esther was told, is this wicked lady, Herodias, or Herodias' daughter, is told. Yeah.
Yep.
And then what does she want? One thing. Mm-hmm. Kill this guy, get his head, put it on a plate. Yeah, so persecution exists in the church, but persecution isn't bad for the church. Like, it's a bad thing. I think as Christians, we should pray for an end to persecution, because it's destroying people. But in it, there you know, the blood of martyrs is the fertilizer for the church.
Blood of the martyrs is what? Yeah,
yeah.
I can't remember that quote exactly.
Yeah, and
think of it.
Yeah, I couldn't pull it either. But the truth is, like, as the church becomes winnowed, it becomes stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And while there may be less in number, the only thing that those believers have to hold on to is the life, death, burial, resurrection of Jesus Christ, and they are fully in because they've counted the whole cost of their life and said, "I will die to make Jesus known." And when your faith is that faith, well, that faith is powerful.
Yeah.
That's not I walked the aisle, I raised my hand when said I didn't want to go
to
hell.
That type of faith really makes people on the other side doubt themselves, you know, really. If you're an executioner about to kill somebody, you're just like, man.
Oh yeah,
I couldn't. I would probably wouldn't act this way to save my own children. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, how could somebody?
Well, you hear that in the old martyrdom stories, right? Where they're singing hymns as their bodies are being burned up, or you know, you've got the story of Elizabeth Elliot and her family that her husband went down into South America. They were from Moody, I think, or Wheaton, and the men went into the jungle, had some positive interactions with the native tribe there, and then they went in one day and were all killed. And Elizabeth Elliot comes back, like, and offers forgiveness, and there's like this revival that takes place across, like, a move of the spirit, where the tribe that killed these four or five or whatever it was, young missionaries turned to Jesus Christ because of, like, the forgiveness of the widows, because they walked through persecution and their faith sustained, and their faith still pushed them in to love these people who have done great violence.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of good, like, God makes good things come out of bad situations. I don't think we should long for persecution. I don't think that we should be praying that we would walk into the fires, but we should pray that we would be sustained if fires came. Like, if today the fires came, we would be sustained.
Yeah.
Because in the West, where we are now, we don't have that severe persecution that you see other places, but you're starting to see, like, little, I don't know, like, foreshadowing.
COVID started it for me. Like, you know, you see people who would or would not adhere to certain.
There was a pastor in Canada, right? Who was basically saying, like, we're still going to gather for worship because that's what the Lord's commanded us to do.
Yeah.
And the Canadian government was very opposed to public gatherings. They didn't care if it was church or anywhere. They were opposed to it. And they refused to make an exception for him. So they made an example of him and locked him up and left him in there for a year or two.
Canada really seems to be falling apart.
And so, like, that's our near neighbor, a very similar culture. And they were quick and gleeful. Like, for the government side, we're like, this guy's so irresponsible, and they're all like, and he's just trying to be like, I feel compelled by Christ that my church should gather. And like, we're not trying to spread a contagion and kill everybody. But we're not going to forsake assembling together just because you don't want us to do that right now. And so they came down hard on him. But you have that in, like, free speech issues in the church, where the church should be able to speak clearly on issues like, you know, the confused sexuality stuff that we have in our culture. And if you get up and say some of those things that I could say from the pulpit here, mm-hmm. and say, like, hey, God made men and women, and he made them that way for a purpose, and that's God's good design, and moving away from that to where men dress as women or women dress as men or perform surgery to try to become something else is an offense to God and should not be done. Like, I can say that from my pulpit. I can say it here, and there's no consequences other than maybe some loss of relationship with people who are on the other side of this social issue. Mm-hmm. But biblically, I'm in very good place biblically. But if you were to say that in, you know, Canada or some other places, what in England, mm-hmm. like, you can get very quickly marked as, you know, we're issuing fines every time you say this, jail time for you mm-hmm. speaking this way. And so we need to be aware that persecution could be coming for us just because we've lived in a happy bubble for, you know, 250 years. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that, Zach, generally speaking?
I think that's pretty true. I mean, you can't assume that the paradigm that we're living in currently lasts forever. That being said, it has lasted for quite a while, long while. I mean, we were founded as a Christian nation and still kind of are, and that if there's a predominant religion, this is it. But that doesn't mean that lasts forever.
Yeah. Well, I see stories sometimes come up on, like, in England where you've got people being arrested for silent prayer outside of an abortion clinic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're standing England's silently.
Too. Yeah, they're done.
They're standing silently in prayer and they're getting arrested.
Yeah.
Like, they're not yelling at the young ladies going in. They're not even, like...
I thought things might get better in England because England was the first country to push back and ban transgender surgeries. So I was like, oh, cool. Step in the right direction. Step towards reason. But then that was like a flash in the pan. It was an anomaly compared to their behavior since then.
Yeah.
That was like 3-4 years ago. You know?
Yeah, and it's not really like there are social issues, but there's issues that are religiously informed, mm-hmm. right? And in those areas where the Bible speaks, the church has to have the freedom / courage to speak on these issues honestly. Mm-hmm. But with that will come potential for harm, like, oh, your tax status has been revoked or whatever. I think churches generally need to, like, come to grips with the fact that we may not be given this favorable tax situation mm-hmm. in 10 years or 15 years time. Like, and we need to be okay with that because
we, like, first couple centuries, you have people who are referred to as patrons, and they're referred to as patrons because there was none of that back then. It was like, this guy's the patron because he built a big building on his back nine and lets us meet there. Like, he's the guy funding the whole church. That's why he's a patron.
Yeah.
Like, it might have to go back to that system again. You know, you might not get the tax exempt buildings and everything at some point.
Yeah. And I just think, and I'm okay with all those things, but we need to know that persecution, it can come slow or it can come fast, but we do need to be faithful even in the midst of it. And so when you see, as believers who aren't undergoing the extreme version of it, we need to pray for our brothers and sisters in Christ who are walking in it. Mm-hmm. And we close our eyes to it. Like, I don't want to see what's
it's
going
tough
on.
To watch.
Like you say Somalia, and I'm thinking, I don't know any, like, I know stories specifically in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, I can kind of, like, conflate those to what's happening in Somalia. But, like, I guarantee it's just elimination of believers. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, but I don't even know those stories. And so why is that? Well, they're not being reported widely into the world. But also, I don't want to see it. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear about bad things all the time. I'll just give me something fluffy and good. And
I was actually kind of surprised that North Korea was number one, just because the number of... I can't imagine that there are that many Christians in North Korea, because how does it get there? You know, how do you proselytize? How do you disciple somebody in North Korea?
Yeah.
And that's why I would think, like, okay, maybe they really do persecute Christians horribly when they find them, But in, I would expect like a large, somewhat larger company or company country to be number one, just because the number of deaths or whatever. Like, so I would expect Somalia or Yemen or one of those African countries to be higher.
The reality is, though, we have, like, the gospel is an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
And it penetrates even the darkest corners of the globe. And so, like, yep. There are Koreans in South Korea. Again, South Korea has a huge Christian population, right?
It's a state religion, right?
I don't know if it has somebody, a state mandate or not.
We were talking about that with somebody the other day.
But for a while, the largest single congregation in the world was in Seoul, South Korea. That may still be true. But, I mean, there's tons and tons of believers in Korea, genuine faith-filled believers in Korea. And so you know that they're trying to find a way to reach their ancestral kinsmen across that border. And so you're smuggling in, and
yeah,
it's a dangerous game, and it will cost them their lives to do so.
Yeah.
But
wait, what a position that puts you in.
Yeah, but for them, it's worth.
Yeah.
It's worth it. And so, you know, I mentioned counting the cost, and when I was in my office, I came in, and someone had put like a news story from a magazine on my seat, and it was written by one of our church members' sons, who's a missionary in Mexico, and he's doing some ministry in a little community, and then there's like a village, and the community ministry is kind of going. There's a church, and there's some stuff there. The village is harder because it's more remote, and they've got more ancestral syncretism worship. You know, we're all Catholic, but not really type stuff.
Santeria.
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah. Just weird. You know, if you know anything about how Catholicism has been manipulated by being in native populations, it's whatever the version of that is. And so, like, there was a fire in the hills out there, and so the missionaries went and kind of helped put that out, and five people tragically lost their lives. But from that, like, it gave them more of an interest, because, like, man, these people care about us. And the, you know, the article said, like, now there's like a church with like 10 to 15 people meeting on a Sunday to Sunday basis there, which is huge. You know, and it's a village of like 1,500, so it's not teeny tiny. But you know, you got 10 or 15 people worshiping every Sunday. We got baptisms, and then the writer said, you know, and there's like a couple more people, I think he said two, but maybe it was three, who are currently counting the cost for whether or not they're ready to follow Jesus, because unlike in America, when they make the profession of faith and go into the water to be baptized, they will experience persecution immediately. They'll be, you know, removed from polite society, and they won't necessarily be killed or beaten, but they may be ostracized by their family. They may be removed from political, social situations that they're in, and so they're currently counting the cost.
Are these pagans converting to Christianity, or what are they converting from?
I mean, they're converting from whatever version of Catholicism exists there, which in that world is pagan.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they're not, they know Jesus. I think the way the article started was like, you know, I believe in the God of my village, St. Luke. Like, I guess he's the patron saint for that little village there, and that's their, like, God. Like, he's not just a saint, like he is as like the worst, your worst impulses of what might go wrong in the Catholic Church. Like, man, y'all aren't just like being like honoring Mary. You're worshiping,
like,
Mary.
Hyperdulia or something like that, where you,
it's a big word, I don't know that one. But like, you're not just kind of like honoring this person, you're worshiping this person as if they're a god.
Yeah.
And so that's the viewpoint of some of the people in that town. So they're converting from that sort of a syncretistic pagan / Catholic background. But it is costly there to do that. And But I promise you, when those people and the prayer that I'll have for them, the prayer I had when I read that was that they would count the cost and count Christ worthy to pay that cost. Like the church is that church, each of those 15 people who show up on a Sunday, like they're living in the power of Jesus Christ. Today we had men's group and we were, you didn't show up, by the way. No, I was supposed to bring this up on the pod that you walked up. We still had 20 minutes to go. Everyone's looking out the window.
You guys started 40 minutes before that, though. I didn't want to walk in the middle of somebody's like
crying and blubbering.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could have just walked in, though. We like, I mean, Rob comes in whenever he gets ready. So you could have just strolled on in.
Get here a little bit early. I had to take the kids for a walk.
That's okay. But one of the chapters we were doing today was like, you know, the triumphant Jesus. And how the church has kind of lost that view of the triumphant Jesus for this more sympathetic Jesus. This, like, in I forget how Tozer said it, but it was basically like we feel good that he'll cry with us, but we don't really trust him with anything because like he's this like us.
Yeah,
and but we have
it's
like
okay, that, Jesus. That church I've got it
in that little village. Yeah. Each person there is trusting in the triumphant Jesus.
Yeah.
Because the sympathetic Jesus, Jesus is a sympathetic, he cares for you.
They're trusting in the revelation Jesus.
Yeah, like the death, burial, resurrection Jesus, and then that next guy.
Yeah, the next one.
Right, who's going to make all things new. And I think as a church, even as we're not walking in severe persecution, if we can grab hold of that, we'll be ready to stand if the persecution comes. If the state turns, if the country's overrun, like if this whole thing could burn up in 5 years' time, we don't know where the future of this country is. But if we're going to stand, we need to stand on something, and that's the truth of Jesus Christ victorious, like the one who died conquering death and hell to win my salvation, to win your salvation, and in him alone do we trust. And so if the world comes at us and wants to throw us in prison, we say, okay, like, I guess we're going to prison, but I have Jesus. Like,
yeah.
The Fernando Ortega song from years and years ago.
Never heard.
Fernando Ortega called Give Me Jesus.
Oh, I know a dude that covers that. Yeah. It's a pretty popular song.
Man. Yeah. And in that song, you know, he's like, you know, when I come to die. When I come to die, give me Jesus.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is like, you can have everything else in this world. Just give me Jesus. And if the church, if this church, First Baptist Church of Rockdale will hold that, like that will sustain us through whatever persecution may come our way. And it is the sustaining force for the church around the globe. And it's the prayer that we who are holding the rope now in relative security should be praying for those believers over there. Like that they would cling fast to the conquering Christ who will rescue them through all things.
Yeah.
You know, like Daniel's friends, when they get tossed into the fiery furnace, like Nebuchadnezzar's like, bow down or I'm going to throw you in this triple heated furnace. And they're like, look, like my God can save me from the fire. But even if he doesn't, we're not bowing down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. To have that confidence. You know, like, my God can save me. He may not. But we're not compromising this because he is the only one worthy of worship. And that's what carries the church through. Pray for revival in those places and into their suffering. And ultimately that God will honor those who died holding on to the faith. You see that in Revelation, right? The martyrs, those who are killed for their faith or around the throne of God in kind of a near special way, which is a pretty neat picture as well. Yep. So
when I was a kid, I had that book, Jesus Freaks.
Yeah. It's still on my bookshelf somewhere.
Yeah. I've got it somewhere too.
Yeah. There's a lot of stories and we can grow from them. But the truth is those stories sadly are still being written like today, today, somewhere around the world. Someone's house was burned down, you know, someone's business was looted, someone died.
Yeah.
Because they trust Christ. We live in such a peaceful world today in our little insulated Bible Belt.
Yeah, it's I think it's just one form of, I don't know, I could be wrong, but it feels like one form of attack by the enemy, right? It's like one method employed. It's just the,
yeah, Satan's super still active comfort. Doing stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just, yeah. He just trying to keep you lulled to sleep.
Yep.
Entertain you to
different
death.
Strategy. Yeah.
So anything else, Zachary, on that topic?
No.
Let's turn just for a second to some fun nonsense here. I was reading, it's been a little bit ago, but you know, AI is all the rage, Zach.
It is.
Is your company getting into the AI business already?
My company is an AI company.
Yeah, I figured they would be. They're all AI companies.
It doesn't tell you how to live your life. It just...
Yeah. So there's a chatbot.
Can't really tell you what it does. It does stuff, but it doesn't chat with you.
So there's a chatbot that's been set up by an agnostic. An agnostic? What's an agnostic, Zach?
Non-believer. No. Agnostic is a fence sitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone who refuses to take a firm position. So they're like, God may exist. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have enough information to make a decision on that. So they're not atheists, but they're also not claiming any version of religion at all.
It's actually the hardest person to evangelize.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because if you don't believe anything, it's harder to flip the switch into believing something than to believe something and go to believing something else. But if you're just if you're neither hot nor cold, you're just lukewarm your whole life, it's really hard to make you do it.
I've read about that somewhere.
You want to do, yeah, I know.
Somewhere in the Bible, I think.
Yeah.
So
it's really hard to make you want to do anything. And I was listening to one apologist that was, you know, talking with like a former Satanist. Mm-hmm. And they both agreed. They're like, yeah, it's, you know, at least as a Satanist, I hate Jesus. At least I have an opinion of him.
Yeah.
That you can then talk about. But people are just like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. You can't pin me down to anything.
So the programmer for this AI chatbot is that sort of a human being. And they create a variety of chatbots. You can chat with Mary or Peter or Paul or Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a talking with Jesus chatbot. And you can just ask Jesus whatever questions you want. And there may be some scripture that he's going to be referencing there. But if you have any experience with kind of the AI back and forth chatting thing.
Or the devil.
Or the... Yeah. Actually, Satan
likes to use,
just so you know, Satan is also one of the people you can talk to. He made a talking with Satan chatbot as well. Same guy. So you can know the source, but you know, there's thousands of people who've downloaded this app to try to get like to hear from Jesus. And what they're hearing from is a corruptible version of, I don't know, this guy's fever dreams of what Jesus might say. And people have tested it, obviously, to see, like, do you say this? In this situation, Jesus said this. What do you say? Not consistently lining up with the New Testament, as you would imagine. Very soft and meek and inoffensive.
Yeah. It doesn't want to get shut down.
Yeah. So.
It's not immune to persecution.
No.
Even though it's not a living thing, it still cares if you kill it.
But, you know, people are curious and people do want spiritual guidance and they look and they want to hear. Like, we want to have like this certain hearing of what God has to say to us.
Itching ears.
And I'll tell you, if you got a chatbot that kind of sounds sort of like Jesus, says some Jesus-y things, but the whole time it's like, you're great. I love you. You're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feeds into this narcissism that we have, that we love to get stroked, and it's unhealthy. So if you want to hear from Jesus, I have two wonderful ways for you to do it. One is to open your Bible. And in the New Testament, you'll see Jesus speak a lot. You can see him speak in the Old Testament as well. So you can read that.
There are 66 books you can read.
Yeah.
If you want to hear from Jesus.
Yeah. Or you can pray and let the Holy Spirit, you know, talk to you through prayer and leadership in that way.
Yeah.
Aside from that, don't download any apps to do that. You can download an app to read your Bible, I guess. Mm-hmm. But don't download an app to think that you're talking with Jesus or Peter or Paul or Mary or any of them, because it's all nonsense out there. So beware. There's nonsense all over. People peddling stuff just to make a buck, which is all they worship anyways. So I got nothing. You got anything?
No.
All right.
That's it.
Well, we'll see about next week. It's been hit and miss, but baby Roland's coming.
I think next week should be a go.
Little Matthew Roland. I'm excited about Matthew Roland.
We
threw that name at Taylor at Sunday school, and she's like, we actually like that name.
But we know too many of them.
No, you know one. That's awesome. That's all you know.
I could list about 10 last names of different
Matthews. I bet they're all roughly my age, too.
No. Some are younger.
It was the name of the year in 1982 when I was born. Like the number really? One male name.
Really?
So like, there's like a, if you look at the demographics, it's like a real peak at my birth year there.
It kept up the steam because.
I just think Matthew Roland, Samuel Roland, Matthew Roland.
It's a great name. It's off and on about 50% of the time. It's my favorite book of the Bible.
Yeah.
Like it's my favorite gospel.
What do you flip to after that?
Huh?
If it's off and on, what's the other favorite book of the Bible?
John. Job. 5% of the time it's Genesis whenever I get around to reread. Because Genesis is a saga. I mean, that is the most content of any book.
From the creation of the world till like, yeah, there's a lot in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But not just a lot, because there's a lot in Chronicles and Kings. But it's way more riveting stories, in my opinion. But anyway, yeah, I like the name.
Just because you know people doesn't mean you can't use it. It's a good name, man.
It's too many.
Taylor, talk sense to your husband.
I have two first cousins, and one of them's name is Matt. The other one's a girl.
Yeah.
So?
That's a good name. Tell them your name in honor. Tell them your name in honor of your first cousin when really we know.
Last time I'm going to say this, honor of me. But it's a great name. But what I was going to say is that you are like hyper dubious about us not knowing what we're going to have, boy or a girl. We've had four heartbeat reports, you know?
Yeah.
And you know how you can kind of tell by that? Two girl speed. Two boys.
I didn't know you could tell by the speed of the heart. Yeah,
apparently, boy.
So they're transgender.
Boy is faster. I'm not even gonna go. Let's just glaze over that.
Sorry Taylor.
But yeah, we have no clue what it's gonna be.
Well, but what about whenever the doctor told you specifically what it was, Zach?
I have never been to the. I have not. I mean,
what about when they emailed you in your private secret email?
Huh?
It's a Roland baby identification at gmail.com.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've got to think of both names.
So Matthew, right, is a great first name. Do y'all have names picked out, or y'all aren't really firmly committed to anything?
We have thoughts.
You want to see the child and kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I told her, like, you don't have to do it until you turn in the birth certificate. Yeah. So, like, it's okay for the baby to exist for a couple minutes without having a official first name.
Yeah.
Like God knows it. So it's not like he's missing out on her. I say he a lot.
I know you do.
I know. I think I Ruth hopes it's a boy because she wants to be the only girl. And Bubba hopes it's a boy because he's the only boy.
Yeah.
Like he has 1,800 girl cousins and like there's just no boys anywhere. So actually has one, is Maddox, but
that's a lot of cousins. It's 1,800 of them.
Well, his age, like, yeah, we have a lot of cousins.
It's a big family. Rollins.
You call a second cousin a cousin, but you also call like an eighth cousin a cousin.
I don't know what an eighth cousin would look like in my family.
Well,
the other day, my wife
never been to my family reunion.
You can probably explain this to me. So I have a cousin. What is her son to me?
Cousin.
Just. And what would that son be to my son?
It could be.
What would that son be to my son?
How close are you with this cousin?
Relationally. Not overly close.
Then cousin.
Okay.
If you were really close, then it would be your nephew, or you could say. They would. You might not call them a nephew or a niece, but they would call you aunt or uncle. Does that make sense? I've got people that I call uncle this, aunt that, but they're like just old cousins.
Yeah. Because a minute ago you said you had one male cousin, and his name was Matt.
Yeah.
And you have one other cousin who has an unknown name.
My grandmother's son's son.
Grandmother?
My mother's mother's son's son.
So Kenny's son.
Yes.
Is Matt.
Yes.
Is he a good dude?
Yes.
We love him.
Yeah, we love him.
We love me.
Yeah.
We love him.
Taylor. My argument was
Taylor, make it happen.
My argument was
when you see that baby and that baby's a gift from God, you're like, we want to call this baby gift from God. You know what name that would be, Zach and Nadia? That would be Matthew. That would be the name. All right. Well, y'all enjoy that. Hopefully we'll be back next week and we can give Zach a hard time about that again. Let me pray. Lord, I love you. Thank you for the grace that you've given to us. I do pray for our brothers and sisters around the globe who are suffering under severe persecution. I pray they would cling to you, Lord, and that you would sustain them through this persecution, that your church might grow stronger in the midst of it. And ultimately, Lord, that those who are causing persecution, that you would save them or destroy them, Lord, and that you'd bring an end to the suffering. And we know that you will return. You'll make all things right. We long for those days. Hold us who live in relative peace and security close to you, but don't allow that to be an excuse for us to compromise in our faith with weakness. Let us hold to the saving Jesus Christ alone. We love you. Amen.
Amen.
Peace.